I don't know how many times I've gotten up and at the wrong time, so I'm always a little leery. It's always a little easier to not jump up until it's your turn, until somebody says, it's you. Because more than one time, somebody has grabbed me by my coat and said, hold on, it's not you yet. It's so good to be with y'all. Y'all, this is I love Tanner. I hope y'all won't hold this against me, but I like Robert Hall. I know. That gives you that kind of tells you my character, but I think y'all got a good one in Robert. I like Robert, and so I like people who like my friends, and so y'all like him. I like y'all. So this is a good group. I love coming out here every year. I kind of look back through my records, and I don't even remember. It probably started maybe 05 or something. So I've been coming out here every year on the summer series for a long time, and I always appreciate it. This is a great church. Really appreciate the support that you have given Heritage Christian University over the years. And there's a part of my heart that belongs to Heritage, and so there again, I love the people who care about the things that I care about. And training ministers is something that I care very deeply about. I have been teaching the homiletics class, which is a fancy. We always got people at college, in education, you got to have a fancy word for stuff, and homiletics is a fancy word for preaching. And so I've been teaching the preaching class for some time now. And we just finished Titus Camp. Titus Camp we do every year. This year we had 65 teenagers, and we get them on Sunday. It was not last week, but the week before. We get them on that previous Sunday afternoon. We start doing devotionals, and then we do classes with them. We start on Monday, start working with them on their lesson. We do classes with them for 8 days, and then we take them, all 65 of those teenagers, they're all between the ages of 13 and 19, and all 65 of those kids we took out to local area churches in the Shoals, and every one of them delivered the lesson that they had prepared that week. And they all sign on to about 9 hours of Bible study per day for Monday through Friday. And so I always think whenever somebody says, oh, you know, the future of the church or these young kids today, after a week like that, I kind of tend to think, you know, maybe it's going to be okay. It's probably going to be okay. So we had a great week. We had 65 kids, and we don't have as many responses. A lot of times, we don't always offer an invitation, but we started offering an invitation in the evenings this year. And sometimes we will, you know, we kind of alternate. But if you have, they get up in the morning and they have a devotional at 7:15 or at 7:45. Then they go to about 2 hours worth of classes. Then they have chapel. Then they go to about 3 hours worth of classes. Then they have another chapel that we call Power Hour. Then we try to do some fun activity. And then they have an evening devotional too. And so we don't offer an invitation every time. But this year we decided we were going to offer the invitation at the Power Hour. Well, we ended up with 49 responses of those 65 kids and one baptism. So that's a pretty special thing, and I appreciate y'all are a part of that, and I really appreciate that. Of course, we just got a new president, President Kirk Brothers, and I bring you greetings from him and from the school, and I want to tell you again how much we appreciate you. For my lesson tonight, we are going to look in the book of Luke, so I would encourage you to grab your Bible and we're just going to kind of flip through a little bit of the book of Luke and talk about Luke a little bit. We'll start in Luke chapter 13, where Jesus is going to Jerusalem. In Luke chapter 13. I was talking to one of my buddies the other day, and there's an old expression. I know that a lot of y'all have heard it before. But every time, there's certain expressions that I get tickled at every time I hear one, you know, like, oh, he's good people. I don't know why that is, but it sounds funny to me. You know, it always, the tenses aren't right. And so I always think that was funny. But we were, me and this buddy of mine, we were standing there and we were watching his kid play, and his kid's a preteen. And The kid's got ADHD really bad and is super hyper and is just going 90 miles an hour all the time. And we were talking about him playing sports. And my buddy said, I asked him about it. I was like, hey, is he playing sports? And he said, well, he started playing this, but he quit. And then he kind of shook his head, and we were both watching the kid. He shook his head, and he said, that boy's got a lot of quit in him. You know, I kind of got tickled, you know. I've heard the expression before, but I kind of got tickled about it. And I met a lot of people that do, that have a lot of quit. My mom and dad, my dad had this deal with us when I was in school. And my dad said, you know, if you want to play a sport, that's fine. But, you know, once you join the team, you're on the team and there's no quitting. And my dad did not, like he did not want us to play Little League Baseball. He did not want us to do that. And the reason was because he was going to have to drive us back and forth to all the practices and to all the games. And so what he would do is he would say, I would come home with a little sign-up sheet and I'd say, Dad, you know, we can play peewee football now. And I'd lay the sheet down and he would look at it and he would go, $65. How about, here's what I'll do. How about I give you the $65 and you don't play? And about half of the time I would be like, ooh. Looking back, I realized what a stupid kid I was because I should have gamed that system, you know. I should have said, like, hey, there's baseball too. And then when he paid, I said, hey, there's this one too. I wish I had just gamed the system and say, that's $200 you owe me not to play any sport this year. You know, I wish I had done it that way. But our deal was, once he paid the $65, they owned me. That was it, you know. If I said I was going to play, I had to play. There was no quitting. And so once you're on the team and once you paid the money, you're going to play. That's all there is to it. And you're going to every practice and you're going to every game and you're going to see the whole season through and there's no quitting in the middle of the season. Now, if I'll buy you out right now, I'll give you the $60 right now. But once we pay the $60, we're going to get our $60 worth. And there's no quitting. Sometimes in life, things happen that make you want to quit, that make you want to give up. When I was in high school, I had a biology class one time, and my teacher, he decided that he was going to take us all on a field trip, and on this field trip, he was going to take us to this, it was a little wildlife management area, but really all it was is, this was in Illinois. I grew up in Thomasville, Alabama, and then late in my high school career, my dad decided that we were going to move, and he started preaching for a church in southern Illinois. And so we went to this place, you know, I was going to this school in southern Illinois, and my biology teacher decided that we were going to go on a field trip, and he took us to, this place had some fancy name, nature preserve, blah, blah, blah. We would call it the woods. That's where we went. And we were going to walk around and pick up leaves, and he was going to teach us to identify trees. And so the day of the field trip came, and it snowed. And so I packed up some overalls, and I packed up. I had some brand new rubber boots. I thought, I'm going to take these rubber boots, and so that way my feet will stay dry. And so we got on the bus, and there was about 2 inches of snow on the ground. I mean, you know, here it would be like no school for a week. You know, everybody hurry and go get bread, milk, and eggs. And that's always weird to me too, because I want Pringles and toilet paper. That's what everybody else is going for. I want Coke, and I want potato chips. That's what I want. Those are the things that are really important to me. But we had about 2 inches of snow on the ground. We got on the bus. We ride for about 45 minutes. They open the door. We get out, and we start walking down these trails. And it was just instantaneous chaos. Like everybody, we kind of divided up into little groups, and everybody just walks down this trail, and everybody gets separated. And there's 2 inches of snow on the ground. And a couple out, we were supposed to just walk for a few minutes, and I don't know what happened, but we ended up walking for hours. And after a few minutes of walking in these brand new rubber boots, I had decided, like, I have made a strategic error. Like, this was really, really stupid. And we walked and we walked and we walked, and finally we got to a gravel road, and we walked and we saw a house, and there was a little smoke coming out of the chimney, and we walked over, and my group probably had 10 or 15 people, and we knocked on this poor guy's door, and it was just like a one-room little house, and there was a little wood stove in there, and we got in this poor guy's house, and we were huddled around this little stove, and somebody in the group called on the telephone, and they talked to somebody, and they all had, you know, this was back in the day where, you know, we didn't have cell phones and you had to pre-plan where you were going. I think what happened is they called the school, and the school called the bus driver on a radio, and then the bus driver knew where we were at and drove around and come get us. And when they hung up and said, "Hey, the bus driver knows where we're at and he's going to come get us," I was like, "Thank you." Because I had blisters on the back of my heels the size of silver dollars, and I thought, I cannot walk back to that bus. I cannot do it. I'm done. I'm going to have to live here with this guy the rest of my life. You know, I'm done. And I think sometimes in our Christian life, I think we get to where we're just like, I can't take another step. And when you ask me if I had one last sermon to preach, or if I had one last thing to say, I think I would say what pretty much is the theme of the New Testament is do not quit. And do not give up. We are all on this journey together, and everybody needs to arrive together. We all need to get there together. And I don't want to lose one on the way. As a matter of fact, what I want us to do, and I think what let me boil it down into super oversimplistic terms. Like, you sit there and you think about this and tell me this isn't so. Like, what the New Testament says is we're all on a journey together, and nobody needs to stop or get left behind. What we need to do is convince people to go with us along the way. And what we ought to do is we have left with a group and we want to arrive at our final destination with more people than we started with. And if I had one last thing to say, I think I would say what so many writers in the New Testament say, and that's, do not quit. Do not quit. When you think in your Christian life, I cannot take one more step, you got to take one more step. When you think, man, the pain is, the world has a way, you know, the world is caustic, and the world is poisonous, and the world has a way of beating you down. Years ago, I worked in Arkansas as a full-time law enforcement officer, and I decided I wanted to be on the SWAT team, and so I started training with the SWAT team, and I remember one time, we went to this little community college, and we were training entries and takedowns, and we had the guy that we asked, "Hey, will you be our bad guy?" And we put him in this red suit it was about 2 inches of padding all over his body, and he had a little face mask, and everything on him was padded, and we stood at the door, and we stacked up. We would come in the door, and then we would yell at him, and so we were just practicing entries, and we told the guy, "It resists to whatever level that you want to resist. You do whatever you want to do. If you want to fight, you fight. If you want whatever you want to do, you just do whatever you want to do." The first time, there was five of us. We stacked up on the door, and we enter into the room, and we're doing, you know, police department search warrant. "Get down, get down, get down, get down, get down." And the first time, he's like, "I ain't getting down," you know. And so we start doing the arm bar takedown, and we get him on the ground, and we're wrestling around. He's fighting us, and somebody puts a knee in his back, you know, and we get his arms, and we get him handcuffed. And so then we come up, and we take him out. And so then we undo the handcuffs, and we do it again. The next time, he does the same thing, and we practice again, and the next time, and the next time. Somewhere about that fifth time, when we hit the door and said, "Police department, search warrant," he just hit his knees and just fell face forward, you know. After so long, after you get beat, you finally get to the point where, like, there is zero resistance, you know. And so the last few times we did it, he was just like, you know, he was already, you know, if we had just slid the handcuffs into the room, he would have been like, "Hold on," you know. Because after you do it for so long, you just get beat down and you get beat down and you get beat down and you get beat down. No resistance. And that's the way this world, that's what it does to us. This world beats us down, it beats us down, it beats us down, and it beats us down until we get to the point that we quit offering resistance. Here in Luke chapter 13, Jesus is headed to Jerusalem. He's been teaching them along the way, but Jesus has been, he's headed to Jerusalem, and he knows what's about to happen. And they are, he's telling them there in verse 22 about the narrow way, and broad is the way, and I want you to go in at the narrow way. Don't enter in at the broad way. And there in verse 31, on that very day, some of the Pharisees came to him saying, get out and depart from here, for Herod wants to kill you. You know, I don't know if these Pharisees are, I don't know what their motivation is, but anyway, they're giving good advice, and Herod wants to kill you. It's really who ends up killing them is them. But they say, get out and don't go to Jerusalem, because if you go to Jerusalem, you're going to die. And I have zero doubt in my mind, Jesus knows exactly what's going to happen to him when he goes to Jerusalem. He knows exactly what's going to happen to him. In verse 32, and he said unto them, go and tell that fox, behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today, and tomorrow, and the third day, I shall be perfected. Nevertheless, I must journey today. Some of the different translations, if you're reading, I'm reading from the New King James, if you're reading from some of the different translations, what it says there is, I must keep going. I must keep going. Jesus knows exactly what he's headed for. I don't have any doubt in my mind that he knows exactly what's going to transpire. Jesus knows that he is going to be tortured unto his death. And they tell him, if you keep on your way to Jerusalem, you're going to be killed. And Jesus knows, if I keep going to Jerusalem, I'm going to be killed. But what Jesus' response is, I must keep going. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to quit. I've got to keep going. And I think that what we have to do, I think we have to have that attitude where we say, you know what? And I don't know what life holds for me. But if I knew, it's got to be harder to know that you're going to go and you're going to be tortured to death. Like, I don't know what the worst conceivable thing that you can imagine happening to you in your life. But I can't imagine anything much worse than being literally betrayed unto your death by your best friends, forsaken by everybody that you know, and you're standing alone and you're tortured till you die. I mean, I don't know what scenario you could create in your mind that would be much worse than that. And Jesus says, I got to keep going. In our life, I know that difficulties come, but we've got to have the attitude that I've got to keep journeying on. I've got to keep going. I can't stop. As Christians, even when it gets hard and when you get beat up and when things are hard, we've got to keep pressing on. We cannot stop. We cannot quit, but we have to keep journeying on. A couple months ago, Stacy and I, my wife, we were watching a movie on the television, and it was about Everest. And I have been interested in that for some time, and it's really a curious thing to me. But one of the things that I find just, I don't know why, I guess it's morbid curiosity or morbid fascination or what it is, but there's a really interesting thing about Mount Everest. And as you go up to the highest altitudes, there's about four camps that you camp at. You know, you always hear base camp and this. Well, about that fourth level, at that point, you are so high, there's not enough oxygen in the air, and you literally you are dying when you reach that altitude. When you get into the 26,000 feet range, you are literally dying because there's not enough oxygen to keep you alive. And what happens is most of the climbers, they have enough energy to get to the summit, but you've got to have more energy. You can't just get to the summit. You've got to have enough energy to summit and then to return. And what happens is some of the die along the way, but there's a larger number that make it to the summit, but then they don't have enough energy to return. And you do not have enough energy to help anybody. You cannot help somebody else. And so what happens is those climbers, they will know that this person is dying, but they cannot help them. Because if they help them, they will die. And the last count that I had looked up, it says there's about 200 bodies on Mount Everest, people who have died. And there's kind of a custom with the climbers. They understand and they all know that if I die on Everest, that my body will lay there. Like, they cannot get me down. They say that picking up a candy wrapper is excruciatingly difficult at that altitude. And when somebody dies, what happens is their body heat will melt some of the moisture around them, and they literally will freeze to the mountain, and so you can't even pick them up if you wanted to. And there's an area that the bodies are so strewn that they call it Rainbow Valley because all of the bright colored clothing that they wear. And so as you're climbing up, you are seeing those people who did not make it. And there's one, and they all, some of those bodies, like, they get nicknames or they become milestones. And there's one Indian climber who, if you look this up, there's one climber that there's a famous milestone that's called Green Boots, because there's a climber that passed away. He summits, he returns, he doesn't have enough energy to make it, and he decides, I'm just going to rest for a minute. And there's a little rocky alcove that he laid down in to rest for just a minute. But a minute turned into forever. And now every climber that summits has to step over his legs. Because we're in such... If I had one sermon left to preach, I would say, do not stop. You cannot stop. You've got to pick up your feet, and we've got to keep journeying on. We cannot stop. You know, what I want is I want us all to get there together. You know, I want to all arrive as a group. And we've got to have this attitude that Jesus says, Jesus knows what he's going into. And he says, I have to keep going. I cannot stop. I have to keep going. It's in Luke chapter 18. Actually, you know, I can refer you to, you know that this is the truth, but you can look over in Luke chapter 22, what Jesus does before he enters into that period. Where do we find Jesus right before the crucifixion? In Gethsemane. What's he doing? He's praying. He's praying. Okay, the first thing is we have got to keep going. We've got to keep going. And when you get to the point that you think, I can't keep going, then what do? You pray. You pray. That's exactly what Luke says Jesus does in Luke chapter 22, there, 39 through 46. We see Jesus is praying. But in Luke chapter 18, you see this is what he tells us to do. In Luke chapter 18, he tells us, when we're at the end of our rope, what do? We're to pray. He gives Simon Peter this advice. You know, when he goes away, he comes back and he says, you should have been praying that you don't enter into temptation. Simon Peter thinks, man, I can do this. There's no problem. Well, there's about to be a problem. There's about to be a problem. And what we need to do is we need to understand that when trouble comes, that we need to pray. In Luke chapter 18, he spake to them a parable that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. Here's the parable that he says, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. And there was a widow in that city, and she came and she asked him, saying, give justice for my son. And you know, this is an odd parable. And Jesus says that he's an unjust judge, but because of the persistence, because she keeps asking, then the judge is going to eventually relent, and he's going to say, okay, because she's wearying me, she's just like, she will not leave me alone, because the parable is about persistence and prayer. And if you need we don't often get the running commentary in the Bible, but if you need it, there in verse 1, and he spoke to them a parable to them that men, here's the point of the parable, that we always ought to pray and not lose heart. That we pray persistently. When you are at the point where you think, I cannot take another step, you gotta pray. And I know that a lot of times what we do is we use prayer. Prayer becomes like this 911 call. And I used to kind of preach against that. Now I'm not so sure. Now I think maybe, you know, I think we ought to pray before, but during the event, we ought to be praying too. And what Jesus says, one of the things that Jesus does is he prays before trouble. You know, what we do is we pray when we're in trouble. I think what we ought to do is we ought to pray when we're in trouble, but we also ought to pray before the trouble, and that's Jesus' advice to Peter, is Peter, what you need to do is you need to pray that you do not enter into temptation. When you're in the temptation, it'd be a good time to pray too. When we're in the difficulty, when we're in hard times, when we are getting beat down, what we ought to do is we ought to pray and not lose heart. You cannot quit. You can't quit the journey. You cannot give up. You've got to take another step. It doesn't matter how tired you are. If I only had one sermon left to preach, it would be do not stop. You cannot stop. You can't rest for a little while. You can't enter into... I think what I'll do is enter into a little temptation. I'm just going to stop and enter into a little temptation. I'm really tired. And the world, like I said, it has this way of beating you down in a way that you don't expect. That's exactly what happens to Peter. Peter is ready to fight and to die. And I firmly believe that Peter is not a vain promise. When Peter says to the Lord, I am ready to go with you to Jerusalem and to die, I don't think that's a vain promise. I think that Peter is willing to go and to die. And we know that there are two swords. We know that Peter has one of the swords. And we know that Peter cuts off Malchus the high priest's ear. And we know that there is a multitude. And we know that the Greek word there means a bunch of people. It's more than 100 people that come to arrest Jesus in the garden in the middle of the night. And Peter pulls out a sword and cuts off Malchus's ear. I do not believe that when Peter said, I'm ready to go with you and to die, I don't think that that's a vain promise. I think that that's a legitimate promise. They only got two swords, and here this mob comes to arrest Jesus, and Peter is swishing at people with a sword. I think that Peter is, I think he's ready to die for the cause. I also don't think Peter is Zorro, and I don't think that Peter is so good with a sword that he can just cut off people's ears at will. I don't think that that's what happened. When I was at the police academy, they taught us, we were doing baton lessons, and they said, okay, you can only strike with a baton from the waist down. And somebody's like, why is that? You know, what if they got a knife? You know, and the instructor's like, if they've got a knife, you shoot them. You know, you don't hit them with a baton. You know, but the reason you don't hit anybody with a baton above the waist is if you want to hit them in the arm, if you want to hit somebody in the shoulder with a baton, what are they going to do? And where are you going to hit them? You're going to hit them in the head. And he said, you can't hit people in the head with your baton. Okay, so you can only do baton strikes below the waist. I think that that's exactly, when I went through the police academy, I heard that, and I'm a preacher, instantly that clicked, and I thought, that's what happened. I believe that, this is my opinion, but I believe that's what happened. I don't think that Peter is swishing at Malchus' ear, watch this, I'm going to cut his ear off. I don't think that's what's happening. I think that what he says is, okay, it's time to fight, I'm going to cut his head off. And I think he's swishing for a head, and he gets an ear. And it has to be really disappointing when Jesus heals him, he touches his ear and he heals his ear. Peter really has to be disappointed and think, you know, I don't know if you know how sword fights work, but if every time I cut something off, you put it back on, it's going to be a long night for me. But I'm pretty sure that Peter, this is not a vain promise. He's ready to fight and to die. But the world has a way, or Satan has a way of coming at you in a way that you do not expect. Peter is ready to fight the mob, but he's not ready to answer a slave girl. And Satan knows that. And the world has a way of putting you in a position and beating you down until where you think, I'm just going to enter into a little temptation, and I'm just going to sit here and rest for a little while until this blows over, and then I'm going to go back to church. But then I'll repent. And you know what? I think... I'm going to work up a sermon. I got to preach this Sunday, and the sermon that idea that I'm working on right now is, we think that if we forget, that God forgives our sin. And what I do is I just want to get further away from my sin. And we think that if I'll just forget about my sin, that God will too. I don't think that's how it works. And I think what we think is, you know, I'm just going to rest here for a little while. I'm just going to stop for a little while. I had a friend at Heritage one time, and he came in. He was going to be a preacher, and he came in, and he said, you know, I think what I'm going to do is stop taking classes for a little while, and I'm going to go back to my old job just for one semester, just for the year, and I said, if you do that, you'll never come back. And he got mad at me. And I said, this is not my first rodeo. I've seen people stop. I've seen people who quit their education. And most people, when they quit, they do not start back. As Christians, we quit. We got to keep taking the next step. And when we get to the point where we're about to lose heart, we can't lose heart. We need to pray. And then you look over in Luke chapter 15. And Luke chapter 15 is the parable there of the lost sheep. The parable of the lost sheep. You know, I don't know how we want to interpret this. But let me tell you what I think is one of the points that I think that we ought to get out of this. Everybody's important. You know what Jesus wants? He wants us to all go together. He wants us to all arrive together. Nobody can stop. And when you get so tired you can't take another step, or when the world's beating you down, or when the things at the job are beating you down, or when you work with terribly immoral people, and when, you know, you're tempted to do this little thing, and when you're tempted and you think, you know what, I just don't feel spiritually healthy, I just don't feel like going to church, that's the time that you need to go to church more than any other time. And what we do is we push away. And we say, you know, I don't feel like going to church. I don't feel spiritual, and so we don't go to church. And that's the time we need to be there. You've got to take one more step. And when it's hard, my mom used to say, you know, I don't know how many times I've heard her say, you know, tonight we'll be driving home on Wednesday night, and she would say, you know, I don't know. I just didn't feel like it tonight. I didn't feel good tonight, but I'm so glad I went to church tonight. I feel so much better now. You can't stop. You can't lose heart. You pray when you are tired, because everybody's important, and we've all got to go. We all need to go together. We all go as a group. We all go together. We all go together as a group. The parable of the lost sheep, what everybody's important. The one is very important. And we want to make sure everybody goes. We want to make sure that everybody arrives together. We can't stop. You can't lay down and rest just for a little while. But we've all got to go together. And if somebody stumbles and somebody falls, we've got to help. And we've got to pick them up. Because we know what's going to happen. You know, I think that in my spiritual life, when I get with some of my friends, what we do sometimes, we'll start talking and our hearts hurt for certain people, and we'll say, oh, you know, whatever happened to so-and-so? Oh, you know, he left the church and this happened. And I think that there are just lost souls who are strong along the way, who they just laid down for a little while, or they just rested for a little while. And if I had one sermon left to preach, I would say, let's all keep taking a step. And when it hurts, when you think you can't take another step, you pray. And let's all go as a group. Let's all go together. Let's, every one of us, let's all hold on, and let's all go together. And let's all arrive at the same time. Years ago, when I was working with a church, and I guess I was kind of serving as their youth director or their youth minister, We decided we were going to go bowling, and all of us, you know, we got on the van and we all drove to the bowling alley. And one of the kids, when it was time to go, one of the kids had gone off by himself, and You know, I guess it's on me, but my family, we all live by the, my family, if you ask my kids, we live by the pirate code. And the pirate code, you know, the military code is any man, no man is left behind. But our code in my family was any man falls behind gets left behind. And so, you know, if I took my kids to the grocery store, when it's to get, you know, they've got about a 30 second, they'll be over here looking at something, and they're just like, where'd they go? Because they're looking for us, you know. And I always tell them, stay with the group. Stay with the group. That's where the safety is. You stay with the group. We went to the bowling alley, and this kid, he decided not to stay with the group, and he wandered off, and everybody got on the bus. Even his sister gets on the bus, and I ask him over and over again, I'm like, hey, is everybody on the bus? And everybody says yes. I'm like, okay, the person who was sitting beside you is there. One that came on the way, they say yes. And so I drive off, and I leave them, and I got a phone call about 2 or 3 minutes after I left the bowling alley that had left a kid at the bowling alley. And so I go back and I pick him up. I'm like, why don't you stay with the group? You know, all the group is here, and everybody else is knows and goes and gets on the bus. You've got to stay with the group. As Christians, we have got to stay with the group. Your adversary is a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. You know how lions work. You know what they do? They cut one away from the group. We can't quit. We're on a journey. We can't quit. And when what men ought to do is we ought to pray and not lose heart, then you've got to stay with the group. We've got to stay with the group. When you think, man, I just don't feel like going, that's when you have got to go. When Jesus says, Peter, you ought to pray lest you enter into temptation, that's when you have got to pray. But Peter just needed to rest a little bit. Peter just needed to rest a little bit. We've got to keep going. And you know what? We've got to take that next step. And we've got to take that next step. Because what I want is I want everybody to arrive together. And I know, you know, we could go to so many passages in Scripture, but in the book of Revelation, in Revelation chapter 3, there we're talking to the church, or Jesus is talking to the church at Laodicea, and he says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. You know what Jesus wants is he wants us all to get there together. That's what I want more than anything. If I had one last sermon, my last sermon would be, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't stop and don't take a rest. Don't give up. Keep walking that Christian walk. Keep running that race with patience. Do not give up. And when you think you can't go any further, then pray. That's when you pray. That's what Jesus says to do, that we ought to pray and not lose heart. And let's all go together because every person is important. And let's all help each other to get there because that's what I want. I want us all to get there together. Amen? Amen. I guess I'll stop. I'd love to keep talking, but I'll stop there. I do appreciate everything, and I cannot wait. I actually was going to read the song when we all get to heaven. I cannot wait until we all get to heaven because that's what I want.